Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
A local author in this morning, one of my favorite local authors, Linda Allen, is here. Linda, welcome back.
Thank you, Ted. It's good to be here.
We did a show last year on your first book, and you are back now with a second book, which is really exciting.
Yes, book two in the series. It's the Live Wild Mystery Series.
It would help if I had the right mic on for you. You are not loud enough. There we go.
Is that better?
Yes. So, Live Wild, talk about, she is an interesting person, and you have chosen to write books. You include the Fredericksburg area, which is fabulous.
They're set in Fredericksburg.
But also menopause is a big thing in these books.
Yes, Liv is unique in that when she starts going through perimenopause, she begins having psychic visions during hot flashes. So I wanted to have some fun with menopause and turn it into a superpower, because I figured if I had to put up with hot flashes every day, which I do, I might as well make them useful.
Well, and that's why, I mean, you've gotten two books out of this, and
yes. We'll
find out later on in the show if there is a third book. How did you ever come up with this whole concept?
I think that actually it began, I think the very first spark of inspiration for it was years ago, before I was even anywhere near menopause. I saw a sign somewhere that said, they're not hot flashes, they're power surges. And that kind of stuck with me, the idea that you could turn this into something good instead of something annoying. So when I set out to write a mystery, I was thinking about, well, what could I make unique about this story? And I think it was really the title of the first book that came to me before the whole storyline, Flashes of Insight. So she has these hot flash-based psychic visions that help her solve mysteries.
So once you came up with, so I guess every book from now on will have a flashes theme to it.
Title, yes. You know, that was actually really hard for the second book. The second book was completely written before I finally figured out what the title was, because I just couldn't get a title for it. It's basically a cozy mystery. It doesn't qualify as a cozy mystery technically, because there is some profanity in the book, because, you know, the women I know use profanity, so I wanted them to be authentic.
Right.
And so cozy mysteries generally have these punny titles, so they're all a riff on a theme for the whole series. And so I was trying really hard to find something that went with flashes of insight, like flashes of brilliance or something like that. And I was really stuck on the title until one day I was rereading the title poem from Edgar Allan Poe's Tamerlane and other poems, that collection. The first poem is Tamerlane. And so I was rereading that, and the first line in it is, kind solace in a dying hour. And so I was like, oh my gosh, that's finally the title, because the story revolves around this collection of poetry of Edgar Allan Poe's. And so the title became Flashes of a Dying Hour. And I realized that the flashes didn't have to be a pun. It could refer to what she sees. And so this is the first vision that Liv has, where she sees a dead body in her vision.
Interesting. It's interesting how you come up with a title, because I never knew if you came up with a title, or an editor comes up with a title, or you kind of both do it in collaboration.
Well, I'm independently published, so I get to make all those decisions myself.
Okay, then that's up to you. So you're in charge then of everything, the book cover everything.
Yes, the book cover was interesting because I was working with the same designer from the first cover, because I really liked it. And partway through, we just weren't making any progress. And it was late December or January, and I had a launch date of March, the end of March. And so I had to scrap that whole situation and find a new designer in January to make a new cover in time for the book. Yeah, so that was a little stressful, but I found someone, and I really love what she did with the cover, because we worked Edgar Allan Poe into it and little elements of the story, which is common with a cozy mystery. Usually there's little hints about the story on the cover.
I never knew the term cozy mystery until last year when we talked about it. And then since then, when I see stories that I know would be, I always can say, that's a cozy mystery.
Yeah, they're hugely popular right now. And I love to read them. But that one constraint for me, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. We have right. colorful language. So,
yeah.
And a lot of the women I know use profanity. And so, you know, it was just, some people argue that it's just lazy writing, which I disagree with. It depends on the characters for me. If it's natural to the character, then it's okay to use it. I don't use it gratuitously, but
right.
yeah, I use it when it feels natural for the characters.
That's interesting because Patrick Ahern with the Riverside Center for the Performing Arts, yeah. we had this conversation when Jersey Boys was here.
And
he came in and talked about it, he put up the, you know, the warning that there's going to be, and he said we had a choice. So there were two versions of that.
Okay.
And he said after reading through it, I felt like the same thing. It's the New Jersey atmosphere, and he said I felt like to take that away would have taken away, changed the show.
Yeah, it makes the people different. They're not who they authentically would be, right? So, and it's not set in New Jersey, but she does hail from New Jersey, as yeah. I do. So,
yeah. So when you develop characters, just talk about how character development, because a lot of the character development is things that happen kind of in your head before you actually sit down and start writing.
I'm weird that way, maybe. I don't plan things out in advance. And for me, when I'm writing a story, I feel like I'm listening to the story. So the characters are kind of showing me where things go. And a lot okay. of times I'm surprised by what they say or what they do. So it's interesting. But in terms of Liv, she was interesting. The hardest part I have is with coming up with names for characters. And so I knew her name was going to be Olivia and that people would call her Liv. And I wasn't sure what her last name was. And I was working on the first book and I was going along and I was like, oh, yeah, her name's Wilde. And, you know, she's a descendant of Oscar Wilde. And so her name's Olivia Wilde. And it never occurred to me until I was at least halfway through the book that her name, when uses her nickname, is Liv Wilde. And I was like, well, that's an interesting name for
yeah.
a character. So why not?
And it's totally, but it's so interesting that you sit, and I guess that you're just sitting there writing,
mm-hmm.
and the story just tells itself.
Yeah, I kind of just listen to it, which is really kind of fun, and can be stressful, too, because you don't know where the story's going to go next. Though with this book, with the new one, Flashes of a Dying Hour, I actually, there was one scene towards the end, sort of the final confrontation with the villain, where I knew that scene ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So I wrote that one before I wrote a lot of the stuff before it. And that actually proved to be challenging later because I had to, the things I said in that scene, I had to then link back to other things in the story as I was writing it. And that became a challenge. So I don't want to write out of order anymore if I can avoid it. But
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was a challenge, but it worked out fine.
Because I'm sure after you get it all done and to go back and read and that there has to be, you adjust things or change things or, oh, that's so
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And with mysteries, I think it's a challenge because you have to have clues and red herrings and, you know, you don't want it to be too easy for people to figure out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting to hear feedback from readers about whether they figured out certain parts of it or not. So, yeah.
So this story is totally independent of your first book.
Yeah, you could read them separately, okay. absolutely, and not miss anything.
So yeah, I can pick this up and it's not going to be, I don't understand
where
this came from.
There's a couple references to the first story, but they're just general references and that you wouldn't miss anything not having read it.
It is called Flashes of a Dying Heart. LindaAllenWrites.com is your website. Is
yes.
Is that where we can get the book?
You can find links to order the book there. It's available in all the normal online retailers
yeah.
like bookshop.org and Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I'll be doing a signing at Barnes & Noble in May, on May 24th, so they will have it there. And it's also available locally. There's one place at Frame Designs Gallery in Fredericksburg, because I work there part-time, and they have copies of it there.
Okay, perfect. Linda Allen here this morning. Much more. We're going to jump into this book. Also talk about her first book because you can get them both. I mean, now you've got
absolutely.
Two.
You should certainly buy the series.
Yes, it is a series. Linda Allen here. LindaAllenWrites.com. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Linda Allen in this morning, the author of Flashes of a Dying Hour, the Liv Wilde series. And I guess before we get into, I mean, even though they're separate, we'll just talk, you can talk a little bit about the first book. You've explained, you know, how menopause plays into this, But talk a little bit about the first book, and then we'll jump into Flashes of a Dying Hour.
Okay. The storyline for Flashes of Insight was a type of wish fulfillment. I used to work at the James Monroe Museum, and while I was there, I learned that James Monroe burned all the personal correspondence between himself and his wife after she passed away. And so the staff always had harbored a secret wish that someone would find a secret stash of letters between them so we would know more about their relationship. And so when I set about writing a mystery, I decided to make that wish come true. So it revolves around a secret cache of letters between James and Elizabeth Monroe that a thief is in Fredericksburg trying to steal.
I like that so much that Fredericksburg is part of these stories.
Yes.
I mean, this is where you live and raised a family here. And
absolutely. I've been here for 28 years.
Right. So and like you say, I first met you at the James Monroe Museum, and then we have kept up after that. But I'm sure you learn a lot.
Oh, I have
area.
So much fun researching Fredericksburg and learning new things about the history. And in Flashes of Insight, there's a story that I took from real life. As far as I can tell, it's a true story about Dabney and Sally, two enslaved people who lived in Fredericksburg, and how they communicated messages across the river about troop movements of the Southern troops and how that helped the Union soldiers.
That was so interesting because it was clotheslines.
Yes, it was. They would move the laundry. Sally worked doing laundry, and she would move different pieces of clothing to different places on the clothesline, and that would send a signal to her husband to tell where the troops were moving.
So Flashes of a Dying Hour, and I am so interested in this because Edgar Allan Poe, to me, is so interesting.
Yes, there's an Edgar Allan Poe theme to it.
Yeah, and because I've been to the Poe Museum in Richmond, where he's buried in Baltimore, and there's just, it's
you're a Poe fan.
Yeah, so totally. So yeah. It is so, and at UVA, where his room was.
Yes. His life was very interesting, and you know, people, I've done a lot of research about him and went to the Great Lives talk about him last year too. And there's all sorts of stories about and speculation about his life and his death. His death was very mysterious too. But you know, that there was, people believe that he was an alcoholic and that drove a lot of his writing. And it turns out that maybe he wasn't an alcoholic as much as maybe he was allergic to alcohol. And so he had a reaction when he would drink. So, you know, you're not quite sure what the real story is. But, so UVA came into the story in terms of inspiration because a copy of his very first collection of poetry, Tamerlane and Other Poems, there was only about 50 copies printed. It was his very first collection, and he had it printed himself by a friend in Boston. And UVA had a copy of it, which is, they're very valuable. One sold a few years ago for over $650,000, and it's about a 40-page pamphlet. And it was stolen from the UVA Alderman Library along with some other things in 1973, and it's never been recovered. And so I kind of got thinking about, well, what if someone found a copy of Tamerlane here in Fredericksburg? Wouldn't that be interesting? And so that's where the spark of the idea for the mystery part of Flashes of a Dying Hour came from.
Wow. So it's just so interesting to tie Poe to this area.
Yeah, there's no record of him ever having come here or set a foot in Fredericksburg as far as I could find. But so how I set it up was that his brother Henry in Baltimore wrote a letter to someone in Fredericksburg and included the copy of Tamerlane with it. And so that's how that letter is discovered. And so treasure hunters descend on Fredericksburg in search of a copy of Tamerlane.
So when I first saw the cover of the book, and I didn't know anything of it, but you tell from the bird, it just looked like the raven that you always see. And then there's a building in the background.
Yes. And it's, you can't, unless you're from Fredericksburg, you probably wouldn't recognize it, but that's okay because it's supposed to be mysterious. But it's the old stone warehouse in Fredericksburg, which plays a prominent role in the story.
And as I looked at it, I thought that was where, but it's a view of the building that I had never seen.
Yeah, it's a historical photo that I found through the Library of Congress that we used for the cover. And it looks a little different because in 1937, there was a huge flood in Fredericksburg that got as high as the Chatham Bridge and covered the bridge. And eventually the bridge washed away and it went all the way up to Caroline Street. And so after that, they decided to build Sophia Street up. And so right now you can only see two stories from the front of the old stone warehouse, but you used to be able to see three. They built up Sophia Street, a whole story, and covered part of the building.
That was why I kept looking at it and thinking,
it looks
like the stone warehouse, but it's too tall.
Yeah.
Or, and I kept thinking, what, maybe it's a different angle.
And if you go behind that building, it's a very tall building. It has four or five stories, well, maybe with including the attic. But, yeah, so it's a very tall building, but you can't tell from the front.
No, because of the way the slope going up. So that is so interesting. So talk about this story. As much as you can.
Yes, I can't. That's the problem with mysteries. You can't give too much away.
No, so just kind of in a general theme there.
Well, you know, one of the interesting themes in the story turned out to be that Liv is trying to understand her visions. And like I said, she sees a dead body for the first time in one of her visions. And so she's really grappling with what's her responsibility when she sees someone else's future. Does she have a responsibility to save this person? And so her friend Lucia shares a story, which is a story that someone else shared with me years ago, about someone she knew who was a healer who had a friend who was very ill and was going to die. And so this person started getting these healers together to try and save this person, but hadn't gotten the person's permission to do this healing process. And so the person got very angry at this healer and said, "You never even asked my permission to do this, as if I haven't fulfilled what I came here to do already. You're making assumptions about my life." And so this person didn't want to be saved. And so that became a theme in the story, which I found really interesting. You know, what is her responsibility if she sees something in a vision?
Because not everybody...
Not everybody needs or wants to be saved. And so she's really grappling with that idea of what is hers to do in relation to what happens in her visions.
I guess as a writer, that's how you incorporate a lot of things, and maybe not even at the time that you even... Especially if you're just writing and going along, conversations or stories that you've had with people on myriad of topics, all of a sudden something fits in and you're able to use it.
Yeah, and I had not set out for that to be a theme in the story. That was just something that her friend Lucia shares early on in the book, and I was like, you know, that's an interesting theme. And so it weaves its way through the whole story.
Again, boy, coming up with names because you kind of picture what people look like, and then you have to assign a name to them.
Well, that's a funny story, actually, about Liv's circle of friends. So she has a circle of women friends that she gets together with every month for a dinner party that they call their monthly. And so they have a lot of fun together. But they're loosely based on my friends here in Fredericksburg that I get together with. And when I set about writing the book, the first book, I needed names for them. And like I said, I have a hard time coming up with character names. So I sent a note to my friends and said, okay, so if you had to pick a name for a random character in a book that might represent you, what would it be? And I thought, you know, they'll take their time. They'll figure it out. 5 minutes later, I had all five names. It was like they had a name just sitting there waiting.
So, that's fine.
Yep. They just rolled them right off. And that's how the names for her friends were chosen. I let my friends choose them.
As you write these books, I can see where it can be. It can be really fun because you're creating a character and you're creating a story.
Yeah.
And as you go around every day and just see everyday things, you could just think, that, you know, there's something that could, you know, that Liv would experience or can be part of this story.
Absolutely. And I use things from my own life and I make things up. But, you know, like the first, I think we talked about the drama flag the first time. That was something from my life that I wrote into the first book, was a technique I used with my daughters when the drama would ratchet up. I made it like a penalty flag and we called it the drama flag. And we would use that when anybody could throw it to break up the moment.
Which is a great idea, because we all deal either in a family situation or even with friends.
Oh,
and I thought that was a great...
It was so useful, yeah. And it wasn't about shaming anybody. It was just about, okay, we need a minute to laugh at ourselves, take a step back. And that's a big theme in both of the books, is humor, because humor is a real coping mechanism for me. And so Liv uses it a lot. And I think there's a lot more humor in Flashes of a Dying Hour, even though that might not seem like there would be with the theme of the book. But there's a lot more humor in this one, I think.
I guess as you do this, do you feel more comfortable now that you've written two and, you know, thinking about a third?
Absolutely, yeah. And I've gotten to know the characters better, so they're a little bit easier to write. And each of the books, though, I get to know some of her friends better, because different friends are featured in more depth in each of the books. And so this time around, I got to know Sophie and Mary a little bit better. Sophie's a librarian, and Mary volunteers at the Historic Fredericksburg Foundation, which is featured in the book. So HFFI and our downtown library both feature prominently in the story, the Virginiana collection, specifically at the library.
Yeah. I've been wanting to go and spend some time and look
fascinating.
At what I hear.
Yes, so much interesting history there. So yeah, it was fun. And I love featuring Fredericksburg sites in the book, in the books. I enjoy having people walk through Fredericksburg and get to see the sites as they go along. And there, you know, there's a scene in at Foodie. There's a scene at the Meadery, which unfortunately has closed now, but the library. And so, yeah, I did a driving tour the other day and shot some videos of different sites from the book that I'll post eventually. But yeah, I like people to get to know Fredericksburg as they read the book too.
That's what's knowing you over the years, I mean, you're a researcher. You like doing that.
I do.
That's the great thing that you've added to this. It's more than just telling a story. There's also the historic facts.
Yeah, and I think that's important. And there's a lot of history to the town. You know, it's been around. We're going to be celebrating our 200th anniversary soon. Oh, I'm going to get that wrong, and the city will be mad at me. But yes, I enjoy incorporating the history of the town, and I enjoy learning the history of the town. I learned about Scott's Island, which I didn't even know was really a thing. I thought there was just some trees on a little spit of land under Chatham Bridge. But it's actually an island called Scott's Island, and there used to be events out there years and years ago at the beginning of the 20th century. Where they had boxing matches and 4th of July festivals and all sorts of things out there. They had amusement rides out there. And I never knew that.
I know what you're talking
about.
It's
very interesting. Yeah, it's so interesting. The things I learn as I go along.
Yeah.
So that's why it's fun for me to research, because I learn things about the town that I've lived in 28 years that I never knew.
Interesting. So does that play a part in the story?
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. LindaAllenWrites.com is, and that is a great website that we'll talk about the book, and it talks about you, and it talks about all the different things. And you have done more than just write the cozy mysteries, and we'll talk about a little bit about that too when we come back. But LindaAllenWrites.com, you can find out information there. And as you said, that it's on all, the book is available, Flashes of a Dying Hour, all the usual places you would expect to find books, and even some local spots.
Absolutely.
Linda Allen here. We'll take a quick break and continue along this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is almost 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Linda Allen in this morning. She is an author of Flashes of a Dying Hour. LindaAllenWrites.com. And when we say LindaAllenWrites.com, that's not only the name of a website. You do write. I mean, you've done. I first knew you and met you at the, what was it, the Independent?
The Book Festival?
The Book Festival, yes.
Fredericksburg Independent Book Festival, yes.
And I knew you from the James
Monroe. And I'll be there this year, too.
Yeah. No, I knew you from the James Monroe Museum. And when I saw you at the Book Festival, it was just like, what are you doing here? And you
wrote, why are you here?
Yeah. And you said, I write poetry.
Yes, I was there with my poetry collections. I've written 4 to this date. Yeah, I love to write poetry. Again, that for me is very much the words just flow. I don't really start with an intention when I write a poem, and it just kind of flows out. But I didn't start writing poetry until 2003. That was something that just literally happened overnight. It was the most interesting experience. But one day I wasn't a poet, and the next day I was.
So when did cozy mysteries become a thing of yours? Had you always thought about doing these?
I hadn't thought about writing them. I had really never thought of myself as a writer, and again, until 2003. That was a huge life shift for me. But I had always loved reading mysteries, and I think it really started very young. My mom used to read me these books called Dory the Little Witch by Patricia Combs. And I loved these stories. And her socks never matched. She was never quite perfection. But there were always little mysteries in these stories. And then as a teen, I started reading the Phyllis Whitney books, who lived in Virginia. And I loved her books, and I just devoured all those mysteries. And so mysteries are books, stories that I've always enjoyed.
That is interesting about your mom, though, and points out for to parents the importance of reading books.
Absolutely. My daughters, we read aloud till they were in their teens. Every night we would read stories aloud.
I was going to say that was the same thing. And I can remember with my daughter, we read all the Boxcar Children stories. And she loved those.
Yeah.
And we would get to the end and she would be like, read it again. Let's read it again.
Oh, books are so important because you learn a different perspective. Mm-hmm. You can travel to different places that you might not ever get to. It's so exciting to dive into the pages of a book and see life from a different point of view.
Oh, and you really do just become part of the story. And
yes.
Sometimes you can't. And when you can't put a book down, that's when you know
yes.
that it's a really good book and that the dialogue flows. And I mean, there's so much to the construction of a story that I'm
absolutely.
Just amazed at. Sometimes we'll put books down, and whether it's something like a mystery or whether it's even or it's a biography, when it's well written, you just can almost feel it.
Oh yeah, it really just draws you in, and you have that feeling of not wanting to put it down. And do you ever get that feeling that when you're getting towards the end of a book where you want to slow down because you don't want it to come to an end, you'll miss the characters? That's when I think it's been a really well-written story, is when you actually miss those characters after you finish reading it.
As you're writing it, you're having a good time and you've done the research, and it's a labor of love, but I'm sure at times you just want to
It's just a labor.
It's just a labor. I was just going to say, you're just probably thinking, okay, come on, let's get to the end here.
I mean, sometimes, but I really enjoy writing the stories, but yeah, it is work. It is a job, and lots of authors have full-time jobs and they're writing, so they're writing, you know, late at night or early in the morning. There's groups of people who call themselves the 5 a.m. writers who just get up at 5 a.m. and write. So, you know, you work it in when you can. But yeah, I think it's a joy and a challenge at the same time.
So when do you write?
I write whenever I can. I write during the day a lot. I'm more of a daytime writer. I'm better off that way. I'm not an early morning person. But yeah, so whenever I can, blocks of time are the best for me.
Okay.
And I can write, if I'm in the flow, I can write 2,000 or 3,000 words a day, which is a lot for me. But it just depends on if the story is flowing at that time. There are times, obviously, when I'm struggling more to find the words, and so things are going slower, and those days can be very frustrating. And it's a lonely job, right? So you're sitting by yourself in front of your computer, and if you get frustrated, you're sitting there by yourself being frustrated. You can't talk it out with a coworker. So
yeah.
That's why I think writers groups are so important. So I belong to Mystery Writers of America and Sisters in Crime, and I also am part of a writer's critique group. And those are the people that can help you get through those days or just remind you that that's part of the process.
And I guess then you can bounce ideas off of people.
Absolutely. With the critique group, we take turns sharing parts of our manuscripts and giving each other feedback.
I was going to ask you how you wrote. If you sat in front of a computer and did it, or whether you just wrote it actually.
No, I do a computer because I can't keep up with the words by hand. Though I do know a writer who writes her books by hands first and then types them up. But yeah, I start with the computer.
I think of the days, and you see the pictures of the Faulkners and the Hemingways writing with a typewriter, and you just think how difficult.
Yeah, and editing is much harder to go back and edit it. I think you go back and make hand notations, but you can't just pick up words and move them around like you could with a computer. So
yeah.
It's a whole different experience.
So I guess if you're just sitting there and the story is just flowing, I find that fascinating that you do that and you don't go into a. But I guess it makes it more. It makes it flow in a more natural way that you haven't set up parameters of this chapter here and this chapter there, that all comes later.
Yeah, for me, that's how it works. But a lot of people do outline the entire story ahead of time, and they work from that outline, and they just build and fill out from there. That's just, I'm what's called a pantser. I write by the seat of my pants. I don't outline things. So, yeah, it has its own challenges, but I think it's fun at the same time.
So you've got the two books in front of you, just sitting side by side. They look very similar as far as how long they are. How many words?
One was longer. It was around 70,000 words, Flashes of a Dying Hour.
Okay.
Flashes of Insight, I don't remember. It was in the 68,000. 6,000 range, something like that.
Okay, yeah. Now that you say that, it does.
It is a little bit longer. Yes, it's a little thicker.
So when do you know you're done?
Never. Yeah, like a book is never done. You could revise for the rest of your life and still find things to revise. So at some point, you have to just make that decision that I think it's done. And I think that's really when it's important to have what's called beta readers. So you have a few people that you really trust that will tell you the truth about your story, that won't, not like your family, who's going to say, oh, it's so good.
We're so you have proud a nice of family. You, Linda.
So if you have a mean family, well, then maybe. But so it's important to have people who will tell you the truth and say, you know, like look for plot holes or tell you if one of the storylines doesn't feel complete. So, yeah, I mean, there are people who help you make those decisions.
Oh, isn't that interesting to have people like that? Because there are things that you might totally miss, or there's something that you think you've explained and maybe they don't
You're
get it.
You're so close to it. You know, I used to also be a filmmaker, so I was a documentary filmmaker. And that was one of the things that I found in telling a story through film was that you're so close to every interview. You know what everyone has said. And you know the parts that you cut out, and it still makes sense in your head because you know those gaps in the story that you weren't able to put in. And so you get so close to it, you don't know if it makes sense anymore to other people. So you have to have other people to read it or to watch it and tell you if the story still makes sense. Because, you know, when you get that close to it, it makes perfect sense in your head because you know all the backstory, you know all of it. You know all the research you did. But did you put enough of the research in the story to have people understand what's going on? So, yeah, you have to have that feedback.
And you mentioned earlier, and sometimes you can do too much research. And I guess as you're reading or someone else is reading it and
distracted by it. Yeah. The first book, you know, Liv lives in a place called Mary Washington Square, which is right next to the library downtown. And it's a series of townhouses that are all connected. And it was the original hospital in Fredericksburg. And I did a deep dive into the research on the building. HFFI was really helpful with some background on it. And I found it fascinating. And I wrote it all into the story about how many wards there were and who the guys were who built it, because one of them, his name was Washington. And it was very interesting. But when I went back to read it, it's, you know, a couple pages of historical background on one building. It was just too much. And so even though I loved and adored the research, it was so interesting to me. You know, it takes away from the story. Is it moving the story forward is the question you have to constantly be asking yourself.
So as you're writing, do you make the chapter mark, you know, this is going to be a chapter, is that something you do later on?
No, they naturally kind of fall into chapters as I'm writing.
Okay.
And I do it chronologically, generally, except for that one exception with Flashes of a Dying Hour.
Storyline, are there storylines that you may not have used in the first book that you used in the second book, or is everything pretty, what doesn't get used, unfortunately, that's it, and You know, you're moving on to a new story.
A lot of times it does end up on the cutting room floor, as they would say in filmmaking, right? So there are things that I have emotional attachments to that, you know, got cut out of the story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like we were talking about the drama flag earlier. There was a whole scene I wrote for the first book about the use of the drama flag with Liv's parents. And her children used it when her parents and her in-laws were together at an event and they were arguing about baseball. And one of the daughters comes out and throws the drama flag. And I loved that scene, but it didn't make it into the book. So, you know, some things you enjoy writing, but you can't keep it in the story.
It is flashes of a dying hour. And I'm sure it's hard to talk because you can't give anything away.
Yeah,
there's too much.
But I mean, you know, so the treasure hunters come to town, and there's one notorious treasure hunter named the Falcon, who is rumored to be in town after this copy of Tamerlane. And so that becomes a person that Liv has to go toe-to-toe with in the story.
The whole menopause theme, has that theme resonated with... Because I just think we talked about this last year when you came in, and that was, you know, that was going to be the theme of these books. And I just feel like it's a fascinating idea to be able to latch on to and talk about.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons that I wanted to use it, not just because I was experiencing it, but because when I first started experiencing it, I had no idea what was going on. And I had these terrible mood swings where I just didn't recognize myself anymore. And I, you know, I had gotten to a point in my life where I liked who I was, and all of a sudden I didn't really like myself so much anymore.
Yeah.
And I finally figured out what was going on and what was driving these mood swings. But I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. So I really wished I had had people to talk to about it. So I tried to get my girlfriends together, and still nobody, like I had one meeting with two friends showed up, and then we never met again. And so I really wanted to write a story where people could talk about it. So Liv and her friends talk about it. They mm-hmm. use humor to talk about it. They're honest about it, about the things that happened to you. Oh my gosh, the monthly scene in Flashes of a Dying Hour, I had so much fun writing that. I was just laughing as they're having their conversation. So, you know, I wanted it to be something that could spark conversations, not just among women, but mainly among women. But I wanted men to also understand what's happening with the people in their lives.
Yeah.
Because so much... As I've researched menopause more and more, it's incredible how this shift in hormones affects every system in your body, things that you don't think about. I mean, you know, it affects your brain. You do get this sort of brain fog sometimes. So there's a lot of things that are impacted by this shift in hormones that we just haven't talked about. We're starting to, and it's wonderful that it's, you know, at the forefront right now. But yeah, at the time I started going through it, nobody was talking about it. So I thought, well, I'll write a story that hopefully will... enable other people to talk about it.
And to make it into a superpower.
Yes. And why shouldn't it be a superpower, right?
Right. Right. But you're right, too, that men should know about some
of this. Absolutely. I think it's important for all of us to talk about it. You know, it actually became... I gave you a little sticker when I got here that says, having a GG kind of day. So GG stands for grumpy gal. And that's the nickname I gave my moody personality when she came along. And that helped me, again, like the drama flag, to take a step back from it and laugh. But it also helped me to communicate to my husband what kind of day I was having. If I was having a really moody day, I would tell him I'm having a GG kind of day. And he would know what that meant.
Yeah.
And he would know, you know, how to interact with me that day or not to interact with me that day. But, you know, that gave us a talking point as well so that he can understand what I was going through. And then he could it helped our relationship to be able to understand what was happening.
You could give this book to a lot of people.
I think so. I hope so.
Right.
But yeah, I do. I think it's something we need to talk about, honestly. It's not like it's a taboo topic. It doesn't need to be. It's your body changing as you get older. It's a really simple thing. But it becomes very complicated when, one, you don't talk about it or you don't understand it. You know, I was shocked to learn how little menopause education people going through medical school are given. Mm. That's starting to shift, but they receive very little information to become a doctor, even half of their constituency will have to go through this at some point in their life, right? So, yeah, it was shocking to find that it's something that not just people aren't talking about it, but the medical profession wasn't even talking about it.
Yeah, yeah, and with so many women, when it starts happening, it's such a shock.
Yes, and you don't, you know, there's such a range of symptoms you can have that it's hard for anybody to know all of the things that could possibly be happening to their body. And so you might not recognize it as menopause, as perimenopause when it starts. I didn't even know there was a separate word for it when I first started learning about it. And it can start very early for people, some of the symptoms, and you might not even expect it in your early 40s or even late 30s for some people.
Well, in the context of a story, you can learn it's not like you're reading a textbook, but you are learning some things.
I hope so. And, you know, I think the way that Liv and her friends share the information hopefully will help people to make it more accessible for people. Because in the first book, there is a part where Liv and one of her friends, who's the older one in the group with her, that... they're talking secretly about it, just the two of them, because mm-hmm. they don't think anybody else would want to talk about it. And then her friends finally call them on it, like, what are you guys whispering about, right? And so they bring it out into the light and they talk about what they're going through. And it not only helps them to talk about it, but it helps the younger women in their circle of friends, too, to understand, you know, what's going on.
Linda Allen in this morning, I guess one of the other things, Linda, when you're writing, especially something like this, where... there are a lot of different messages, whether it's teaching about menopause or just a number of different things. The characters have to be believable, and you always have to, whether it's the conversation or just what's happening, you can't have somebody, all of a sudden, you know, that could never happen kind of thing.
Well, yeah, and you don't want it to be preachy either. Like, so if I want to share things about menopause, I don't want it to be... Liv sitting with her doctor and her doctor giving a long speech about, you know, the symptoms of menopause. I want the women to talk about what's happening to their bodies and commiserate about it. And that's how you share the information. So, yeah, you have to think about how you want to share information as you're writing a story.
It is LindaAllenWrites.com, Flashes of a Dying Heart. That's the current one, but there's also Flashes of Insight. So if you're going to get one, get them. That way you can read one and then go right straight to the other. So.
Certainly. Well, yeah, I mean, you can read them in sequence, obviously, because that then you get the beginnings, the origin story, right?
Yeah. Linda Allen here at LindaAllenWrites.com. We'll wrap it up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Linda Allen here. She is the author of Flashes of a Dying Hour and also Flashes of Insight. LindaAllenWrites.com. And there are you're going to do a book signing in May.
I am at Barnes & Noble here in Fredericksburg on May 24th. It's a Saturday. Starts at 1 o'clock and goes all afternoon. They'll have both copies of both of the books, and I'll be there signing copies, and I'll have some giveaways and things like that.
Get your book signed and get to know Linda. Linda's just a fun person. Just a fun person. You've got earrings that are based
on your first book. It's the cover of Flashes of Insight. Yes, one of my daughters had them made for me for Mother's Day last year.
It is so cool. Menopause is a Superpower is sort of the Live Wild series theme through all of these.
Yeah, you know, for me, menopause, when it started happening, felt like something that was taking something away from me, the person that I thought I was. And so when I started writing about it, I wanted to shift that and turn it into something that was powerful instead. And so I did. And that also helped me in my own life to shift how I thought about it and turn it into a superpower. It's just a different phase of life.
So book three is barely underway,
yes. But it will have a baseball theme and I hate to use the word witch, so it's a Wicca theme and baseball. So baseball and Wicca.
Okay.
Here in Fredericksburg.
I can't wait. I hope a year from now we're having this.
Yes. Hopefully next year it will be out. I don't have a title for it yet, but Flashes of Something.
Okay. So, and I guess, like you say, you write when you have time.
Yes, whenever I have time. I schedule time for writing, too. And I've started working with two other writers here in Fredericksburg, and we actually meet on Mondays and do co-writing. So we write at the same time. There's a method called the Pomodoro method where you write for 30 minutes, and then you take a five-minute break and talk, and then you write for 30 minutes. And so we do that.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, just having someone else, because it is a solitary endeavor, it is nice having other people that you can share that space with. So we write at the library.
There's interesting bookstores around here, and there are a number of people like you that are writers in this area.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of wonderful writers in the area. Jen Furlong and Rick Pullen. Those are people that I've bounced ideas off of. I'm in the writers group with Rick, so yeah, it's wonderful.
Rick's going to be a guest here in a couple.
Yeah,
I think next week sometime. Excellent. So, well, off air we'll have to talk about you. Flashes of Insight, the first book. Flashes of a Dying Hour. Is the second book, and again the second book, because of the Edgar Allan Poe theme, I have to read it just to pick it, because I didn't know about his first book of poetry being stolen from UVA.
Yeah, stolen in 1973, and you know, it's a very valuable collection of poetry because they're so rare. So few copies were printed to start with, let alone survived. So, yeah, it was a fun thing to learn about and to write about. And Edgar Allan Poe is just fun in general to write about. And I had a lot of fun with Poe puns and the Poe fanatics who descend on Fredericksburg and learning about his death, which was very mysterious. He was calling out a name, the name Reynolds, that no one knows who that was. And he was in Baltimore, but he wasn't supposed to be in Baltimore. Yeah. And he was incoherent for days at a time. And, yeah, it was very interesting.
So again, LindaAllenWrites.com, and then it's other places where you pick up books too. You'll find it.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I said, here in Fredericksburg, the one place right now that you can get it in person is Frame Designs Gallery, which is on Hill Street.
Linda, this is so cool, and I knew you when you were involved with history and then poetry and now this. So
yeah,
when the next one comes out. Let me know and we'll
I'll be back.
We'll get together. LindaAllenWrites.com, Flashes of a Dying Hour. Linda, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you so much, Ted. I appreciate it.
We'll do this again.
It's been fun.
So many books. Read it.
Thank you.
Flashes of a Dying Hour. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.